Okay, welcome to October 9th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. It is I, your host, Joseph DeCristoforo, and one of the reasons why I do this show is because history is important. You see, one of humanity's flaws is trying to get somewhere not knowing where we came from. We just wind up going in circles and repeating mistakes of the past. So yeah, history is important, folks. I assembled this podcast from a tool shed in my backyard in La Mesa, California, right next to America's finest city, San Diego. If you're looking to move to the area, or if you have any questions about real estate, check out TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. Because as a full-service Encinitas and San Diego real estate professional, Teresa works with buyers, sellers, and investors in real estate transactions. So yeah, check it out. TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. Go from there. And now let's begin the show as we customarily do with the Pledge of Allegiance. Let's everybody stand up, face the flags, put our right hands over our hearts, and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Very nice, very nice. And now moving on to today's headlines.
Strawberry Fields in Central Park is dedicated to John Lennon.
President Washington calls to end the Whiskey Rebellion. And Alexander Graham Bell calls Tom Watson 2 miles away. All right, so now let's get started. 1985. Strawberry Fields in Central Park is dedicated to John Lennon. Strawberry Fields is named after the Beatles' 1966 big hit, as well as an orphanage in Liverpool, England, where he would cross through as a shortcut on the way to his house. He lived with his Aunt Mimi as a young lad, and she didn't want John to play there, but John would tell her, "It's nothing to get hung about." The 2.5-acre memorial is located between 71st and 74th Streets as designed by landscaper architect extraordinaire Bruce Kelly and features a quiet meditative zone. As fans will tell you, and I'm one of them, John Lennon was so much more than just a songwriter and a peace activist. There was absolutely no doubt in his mind that all the world's problems could be fixed with just one simple word, and that's love. When he and Paul McCartney wrote All You Need Is Love, John made sure that 400 million people in 25 different countries would get the message, so he kept the message as simple as he could. In the song Mind Games, love is the answer, and you know that for sure. At least he did. And just because he said things like, imagine all the people sharing all the world, did not make him a communist. Remember what he said in the song Revolution. If you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't gonna make it with anyone anyhow. When he says, imagine no possessions, he means exactly that. Just imagine. He didn't say, give up everything you own. All he was saying was, give peace a chance. This is what the memorial is all about. It's where he and Yoko like to take their walks down the street from their apartment in the Dakota Building in Manhattan. Every year on this day, thousands of people flock to meditate and appreciate the love of John Lennon's legacy. 1794, President Washington calls to an end to the Whiskey Rebellion peacefully. For crying out loud, don't mess with another man's whiskey! This Alexander Hamilton tax on our favorite grain and rye drink nearly led to a second American Revolution. Not even joking. The young United States of America was in debt from the Revolution. Some states more than others, namely the Western ones. In December 1790, Secretary of Treasury Hamilton thought it would be a good idea to tax distilled drink. Now, young or old, in America, we have a saying, no use crying over spilled milk. Spilled coffee, on the other hand, just might get someone stabbed. So, if the mistake of spilling coffee can be fatal, imagine what could happen if you spill someone's whiskey. I mean, why not just kick his Harley over while you're at it? Trust me, you don't want that fight. This would be the first federal tax levied on a domestic product ever, and the wrong one to mess with. President Washington was opposed to the idea initially, but after talking to representatives from Virginia and Pennsylvania, the idea of the tax seemed very much welcomed. Despite Thomas Jefferson's urging for otherwise, the tax was passed by Congress. For the mass producers, it wasn't a big deal because they had a lower rate of 6 cents per gallon due to high volume. But the smaller folks in the western side had to pay way more than that because of low volume, and the backlash was immediate. May God have mercy on the poor tax collector on a foolish errand trying to collect. One of them was tarred and feathered by men dressed up as women who took his horse and left him in the forest. The exact same thing happened to the tax collector's replacement, only this one was tied to the tree in the same forest for 5 hours. Yet another tax collector's house was broken into by an angry mob, and his wife and children were beaten. Later on, his home was broken into again, and he was held at gunpoint while his record book was taken away from him. In the summer of 1794, Federal Marshal David Lennox began enforcing the collection on unpaid debts and joined the regional tax collection supervisor John Neville to collect throughout Allegheny County. Early on, an argument with a man who refused to pay escalated quickly and led to Neville's Bower Hill house, as well as a slave's house nearby, to be burnt to the ground by a mob of 700 people. David Bradford, a big-time landowner, robbed a mail wagon and found several letters from Pittsburgh disproving of the attacks on Neville's house. Bradford organized a group of 7,000 men to attack the city of Pittsburgh, and when they showed up on the east side, the writers of the confiscated letters were exiled from the city, and the insurgents were offered several barrels of whiskey. Peace was now at hand, as the mob drank it all down and got happy again. Hamilton wanted to send a militia, but Washington decided rather on a peace envoy led by President Washington, the only time in American history a sitting president would lead armed forces. In an alternate reality, according to L. Neil Smith in the Probability Brooch, it would be Democratic-Republican leader Albert Gallatin that would join the rebellion, capture and execute George Washington, and Gallatin would be proclaimed the second U.S. president until 1812. Interesting. But what happened in this universe is that with a force of nearly 13,000 soldiers, when Washington headed to western Pennsylvania to squash the rebellion, the rebels had scattered and were nowhere to be found. Several suspects were rounded up, and two of them faced trial, were convicted of treason, but pardoned by Washington later on. The tax, which was virtually uncollectible, with the aid of Thomas Jefferson, would be repealed in 1802. As far as the handling of the rebellion itself, President George Washington, proving to be the hero who survived America's first real test of federal authority. In 1876, Bell calls Tom Watson 2 miles away. Born in Scotland, Alexander Graham Bell immigrated to Boston in 1871 to teach at a school for the deaf. His mother and wife were both deaf, and he had a strong interest in voice-enhancing technologies. His father and grandfather were in the business of elocution, which focuses on human speech, articulation, diction, tone, all that stuff. He soon met electrical designer and mechanic Thomas Watson, who had become quite the assistant. Legend has it, after coming up with the type of acoustic telegraph, Bell took his invention to the U.S. Patent Office 2 hours before Elisha Gray with a similar device. Once Bell got the patent, he and Watson had a nice chat from the next room. Bell called him on the phone on March 10th, 1876 and said, "Tom, I want you." Okay, so probably didn't go down as dramatic that way. And I believe he said, "Tom, I want to see you." Now came the real test of Bell's invention. Wires were placed between Boston and Cambridge, and it would be on this day in 1876, as it states on the plaque on the wall, the first two-way long-distance telephone conversation was carried on for 3 hours. From here in Cambridge, Thomas G. Watson spoke over a telegraph wire to Alexander Graham Bell at the offices of Walworth Manufacturing Company, 69 Gilby Street, Boston, Mass. Well, these days, I'm not sure if it's still a manufacturing company, but I do know that it's a plaque, and that's what it reads, and it's right next to the t-shirt shop in the 7-Eleven that's right there. Exactly what Bell and Watson discussed for 3 hours, I have no idea, and it's probably irrelevant anyway. What's important is that within the next 10 years, over 150,000 people would have phones. These days, of course, the word telephone is virtually ancient technology since Google purchased the Android in 2005. Since then, the features have piled on and on. Cambridge, Mass., home of Kendall Square, where we can find Google's Open Handset Alliance, gives open source opportunities for anyone who wants to write software or develop an app. Very cool. And so that, my friends, is going to wrap it up for October 9th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I'm your host, Joseph DiCristoforo. Check out the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com. Let me know what you thought about today's program. For example,
John Lennon fans, did I understate the value of what he brought to the cultural community in America as well as around the world, or did I overstate it?
So yeah, let me know what you think. You can also take a shot at some of the multiple choice quizzes while you're on there. Good luck with those. And be sure to check out tomorrow's program. I'll talk about a 1985 hijacking incident, plus the bicycle frame, the Mutual Security Act, sports news, I'll cover some football and baseball, and the Rose. So don't miss it. In the meantime, you can catch me on Facebook and Twitter. So thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for being great patriotic Americans. I'll see you tomorrow.